Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016. I am Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net today. WWE SmackDown spoilers, details on the new WWE Cruiserweight Classic broadcast team. Well, I guess it's not new, it's just the first. Daniel Bryan is part of the new Cruiserweight Classic, and our own Zach Zimmerman is going to be in attendance at the first taping that will take place on Thursday at Full Sail University. You can also check out John Moore's TNA Impact Wrestling hit list. Before we get into my full review of the TNA Impact Wrestling show, I do want to give you a heads up that I was a guest on the Ross Report, the Jim Ross podcast. It is available now. We recorded on Monday night, so we did not speak about Roman Reigns. That hadn't word hadn't come out about that yet, but we spoke about the WWE draft, Kurt Angle and WWE discussion, and much more. WWE Money in the Bank, Brock Lesnar, UFC 200, the list goes on and on. It was an absolute pleasure to return to the show. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you'll check it out. You can listen to it at podcastone.com or go directly to Jim Ross's website, which is jrsbarbecue.com. You can find the show in both places. And big thanks to Jim. And if you enjoy the show, or heck, even if you didn't, let us know. Feel free to let me know via Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. All right, let's get into last night's Impact Wrestling show that aired on Pop TV. There were no technical difficulties. We didn't have to hear about Donna from That 70s Show talking about her hands repeatedly. We had Josh Matthews and the Pope, D'Angelo Nero, on commentary. Drew Galloway opened things up. He just said he wasn't there to whine, complain, bitch. He said he should be TNA champion, and he's not because of one man. He called out EC3. EC3 was said, if you're looking for an apology, basically, I guess I'll give you one, was kind of the idea of it. He ended up rescinding that at some point. Basically what he said is, if that happens to be me, as far as he's looking for someone to blame, I'm sorry. And he did say, he emphasized basically that Galloway put himself in an unwinnable position by going out there in the physical condition that he was, because Galloway was still selling the beatdown that he took from at Slammiversary from Lashley. Galloway said he's not, that EC3 is not the ass-kicking machine, he's the ass-kissing machine. EC3 said he'd make him his bitch, so they were ready to go. They both wanted title matches, and Galloway's pissed off at him. And just as they're ready to fight, out comes Lashley. And my first thought was, oh boy, really? So the guy's going to come out and interrupt his rivals that, you know, he doesn't like either guy, but he's going to stop them from fighting? Well, it made sense. He said he hates to see two friends fight. And then he said that he actually loves it in this case, though. He said if there's anyone to blame, it's EC3 for hitting Galloway, so he's stirring the pot. And he said Galloway and EC3 both wanted to face each other, and then the winner would get to face him. He said that he had an idea that he'd spoken with TNA management about. He said they could have a tag match, and if EC3 and Galloway were to beat him and his partner, they would both get title matches. However, if they lost, they would go to the back of the line, and so Lashley wouldn't have to deal with them anymore. They ended up accepting, and Lashley said that if he and his partner win, then his partner would get the first TNA title shot. And I'm like, oh, okay, so he must have a partner in mind. Well, out comes Eli Drake. He just he's been waiting for something like this, apparently, just standing there at the gorilla position, I guess. But Drake said that EC3 and Galloway can't get along, and then made his case for teaming with Lashley, and they could end up having the first King of the Mountain champion versus TNA champion match. And he worked in the dummy yeah bit that really is just kind of annoying. But Lashley agreed to the match and then shook hands with Drake. And then they started to head to break, as Matthew said that the match was coming up after they got back from the commercials. And here's why I think it worked for Lashley, because he had the scenario in mind. He could have let them fight and then done it, I guess, but it felt like strategy. It came off that way. It wasn't just this guy's stopping his two opponents or two rivals from fighting one another. He's doing so with the thought in mind that, let them be at each other's throat, and let's go ahead and do this match. He wanted to take advantage of the friction between them by putting out this tag team scenario. So I was okay with it. You know, normally I'm all over companies when they have somebody come out and interrupt a fight between two guys they don't like. It never makes sense, but this one, it seemed to, more than most of them. When they came back from the break, it was EC3 and Drew Galloway beating Lashley and Eli Drake in 8:10. It was Galloway catching Drake with a Claymore kick, and then EC3 performing a one percenter. It looked like they were squabbling over who was going to pin Drake. Josh Matthews did a good job of explaining that Galloway pushed EC3 out of the way because EC3 was not the legal man, so he couldn't make the cover, and they couldn't win the match that way. Well, when he pushed him, Lashley ended up spearing EC3, and then Galloway threw Lashley out of the ring and pinned Drake. Now, they were trying to make it seem like Galloway had shoved EC3 into the spear, and it didn't look like that. It just didn't. You know, it was kind of, Josh's explanation made sense, but then when Pope chimed in trying to explain that he had inadvertently shoved him into it, it was like, no, he really didn't, because Lashley was, otherwise, if Lashley just would have been spearing air. You know, was that his target, was to not spear him? And so that really didn't make much sense. Lashley was going to spear him one way or another. But anyway, the match itself, very forgettable. And the Impact Zone crowd, I gave them a lot of credit at the last batch of tapings. They created a good atmosphere, and it hasn't been that way this time around with this set of tapings. Last night was noticeably bad, and it started in this match, and I thought, well, I just don't remember from the tapings when this was, if this was one of those shows that was kind of broken up into two nights, and it's like, well, maybe they've had a long night, and it'll get better once they get to tapings from the earlier portion of the next show or something like that. And it just never did. It was a really dead atmosphere in the Impact Zone. It was disappointing. The broadcast team hyped the main event. Decay delivered a backstage promo. Basically, Abyss and Crazy Steve wanted to know who Rosemary had been talking about. I didn't even know she'd been talking about anybody. And she kept talking about we and trust us. And then she said that since they're so impatient, they would get their answer next. And they went to a break. When they came back, Lashley told Galloway not to be so happy about his win because he still had the power to give EC3 the first title match if he wants to. And he said he could kick his ass anytime he wanted to anyway. Well, Decay comes out, and they end up calling out Bram. And so the idea here was that Rosemary was trying to court Bram, essentially, as far as being part of Decay in some way, shape, or form. And he really didn't want any of it. You know, he just said that he doesn't do makeup. Was one of the lines that he had. And Rosemary said it's not the answer that they were looking for. And so apparently, I think the idea is that there's still some mystery person involved in this, because she was still talking about we. And if Abyss and Crazy Steve were surprised by what she was doing, then that wouldn't be the answer they were looking for. It doesn't really explain, though, what happened next, because Abyss ends up pulling Rosemary away from Bram, and then Steve snuck in and just spat mist in the face of Bram. I guess you could say, well, he was prepared for it anyway, but I'm probably overthinking that one. Decay ended up working over Bram, and Abyss and Steve held him, and she said they're far from finished with him. And she said that he will end in Decay, Decay, Decay. Not every Rosemary promo needs to end with that. It's okay to have some that don't, TNA. We got a little bit of a hype for the Jade and Marty Bell match that would come up after the break. When they came back, Lashley told EC3 that he has control, and he would decide whether he or Galloway gets the first shot. So he's kind of playing those mind games with him, too. And EC3 had a good line. He said, you know, for being the toughest guy around, you sure are a coward sometimes. And Lashley said he would tell EC3 and Galloway which one of them would face him next week. But he said, but wait, just wait. And then he walked away. They went to the second match of the night, and it was Marty Bell beating Jade in 6:20. I think Jade is the babyface. I honestly don't know. Because Marty attacked her at Slammiversary, but I mean, Jade, I think, was a babyface at that point. I'm not into either one of these, either one of these characters. I think that it's just kind of a mess. They're feuding because they're former Dollhouse members. They're both still, Jade was starting to make some progress, I felt, and now that you kind of pulled her away from more known talent and you're putting her in there with someone else who's still trying to get over, it almost brings her back down. But they need to establish why we should be cheering for Jade over Marty if that's what they want. And I think they do. It just doesn't come across well. I didn't blame the crowd in this case for just kind of sitting on their hands. The DQ came into play. Or actually, it wasn't a DQ. Referee Earl Hebner was threatening to disqualify Jade because she brought out a baton. I guess that's what Marty used at Slammiversary as a weapon. And so she wanted to get revenge with it. She ends up dropping it, and so she doesn't get disqualified. But then Marty ended up picking it up later on and striking her with it and stealing the pin that way. So Marty goes over. I guess the idea is that there's more heat on Marty. I don't think there's any heat on Marty because I don't think fans care about who wins this. TNA needs to do a better job of character development here and just kind of laying this out and explaining somehow, some way, which woman we're supposed to like. Mike Bennett and Maria were shown walking backstage, and Bennett said Maria was assaulted in the ring by Dixie Carter slapping her the week before, and he said they were going to the scene of the crime, and Dixie Carter better be there or else. Backstage, Dixie approached Lashley, and I did like this. He asked if, whoa, you gonna hit me? Following up on what happened with Maria, and she said, don't go there, and then said he does not have control over the decision of which man he would defend the title against next week. She informed him that he would defend the TNA title against both men, both EC3 and Drew Galloway, in a triple threat, and Lashley told her no problem and walked away. I thought this might have been, I guess they could have had it, they could have played it where Lashley was rattled by this, that he wasn't happy that this was about to happen. And instead, I think the idea was that he heard what she said and then kind of had an idea. I think is what they were going for. Like, he wasn't bothered by this because I'm guessing it's because he still feels like he can pit them against one another. He can outsmart them somehow. From there, we had Mike Bennett. Yeah, it does feel like we're rushing into TNA's three top stars facing one another in a triple threat. You can make an argument that Jeff Hardy's a bigger deal or whatever, but it's like in the TNA storylines and in the world of TNA, these feel like the three top guys in TNA right now. But they don't play by your typical pay-per-view, monthly pay-per-view structure. They just had Slammiversary. They probably won't have another show until October with Bound for Glory, would be my guess. And so it's different. I still wish they were stretching this out a little bit longer, but we'll see how it plays out next week. If nothing else, give them credit. They are advertising things, in many cases, for a week out, which is something that we don't get enough of in other promotions. Mike Bennett and Maria, though, they headed to the ring. Bennett said that most people in their pathetic lives will never truly understand what it means to be in love. And he said he found a woman who completes him. And he was heartbroken when she was slapped across the face by Dixie Carter. And he labeled it assault. And Maria says she hasn't slept in a week because of the unprovoked assault. And she said she didn't deserve it and she didn't understand why it happened. And then she called for Dixie Carter to come out to explain herself. And there's our cliffhanger, because we are at the end of hour one of TNA Impact Wrestling. And I want to take a moment to tell you about .NET Membership, the ad-free version of the site. All of our audio content available there at ProWrestling.net on the member side of things, including today's 78-minute, I believe, .NET Weekly audio show with Will Pruitt and I going into a great detail about the Roman Reigns suspension. We also talked about a little bit more about Kurt Angle and WWE, covering the Roman Reigns suspension from just countless angles and the fallout, what it means for Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, what it could mean for Battleground, the timeline that we expect as far as did WWE know ahead of time, and I certainly believe they do, as I made clear yesterday. We covered this thing backwards and forwards and really had a discussion that I came away very happy with. And that's not all. It's not just that the full show isn't just about that. A little bit of Cruiserweight Classic and Daniel Bryan talk and much more. So if you are interested in membership, you want to hear that show, or you want to hear the Raw audio review that I did on Monday night, or you want to hear the Q&A show, you want to hear all of our audio content that we do. It wasn't too long ago that I figured out there was over 300 bonus minutes available exclusively for members in audio form in just one week. If you want to hear all of that, I don't know this week's count, I can't promise you anything, but if you want to hear all of our member-exclusive audio content from our entire history, all you have to do is visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Once you are there, you will see the sign-up area, and once you get inside there, you're going to find three different pricing options. Membership rates start at $7.50 for 1 month, and you can save yourself some money by taking advantage of our 6-month offer, or by going all the way for the annual option, which brings the price down to an average of $5.50 per month. And I'll give you a little bit of a heads up. If you are new or would be returning to the site, if you're not an existing member, I recommend listening to the full Ross Report podcast, because I do have a hell of an offer late in that particular show that I think you would be interested in. I'll just leave it at that, but there's your hint for the day. And again, if you ever have any questions about anything related to membership, you can always email me, dotnetjason@gmail.com, dotnetjason@gmail.com, or hit me up on Twitter @ProWrestlingNet. And back to the show, we had Dixie Carter making her entrance, and she was accompanied by Billy Corgan. I don't know if she thought, like, we may need a musical number here, or what was why Billy Corgan was there, but he was. Dixie claimed that anyone in her position would have done what she did to Maria, and Maria claimed she'd been to three different doctors who can't find out what's wrong with her, and she demanded an apology. And Dixie said she's regretted letting Maria get to her. That was about it. Maria said she wanted Dixie to step down as the president of TNA Wrestling. Amen. Amen, Maria. Bennett said that his father is a lawyer, so he doesn't have to pay for any legal fees. And therefore, he can just sue her for so much money that everything she is trying to accomplish would come to a screeching halt. I'm like, well, we've kind of already. Aren't we at that point already? Anyway, great legal mind Billy Corgan, though, told Dixie that they had some good points. He said he's tried to remain neutral in all this, but Dixie put them in a difficult situation. And Dixie asked if Billy Corgan was really siding with them, and he said he was trying to defuse the situation. He told her to take a leave of absence for about a week. A week? You just go away for a week, and that's going to change everything? I wouldn't stop there. I think Dixie should go away for a long, long time, maybe permanently. Dixie admitted that she made an error in judgment, and she says, but Billy, realize, this changes everything. Everything. And she tried to get all intense, and then she left the ring. I'll say this for Dixie. She has gotten better than she was when she first started appearing on television. She couldn't get worse. She's gotten better. I still don't like seeing her on television. And if nothing else, she can, like, feel good about the fact that she is a million times better than Billy Corgan. Billy Corgan is terrible. More on that in a second. So Dixie leaves the ring, and no one really seems to care. And then Maria thanked Billy and said she feels so much better in her place of work. And Mike Bennett said he deserves a title shot. And Billy said, well, we already have our main event next week. And Bennett said Destination X is coming up. I don't know why Bennett just didn't say, well, cool, I'll take the winner. But he didn't. He said that Destination X is coming up, and he wants that title, bringing up Option C, which is that it's this goofball thing that TNA does every year where they, if they have any momentum going whatsoever in the X division, they completely destroy it by taking the title off of the X division champion to put it on one of the guys that they think is close enough to an X division wrestler that they want to have challenge the champion. I don't know why this continues to happen. The idea is that Destination X, whoever holds the X title, can take that title and offer to give it up in exchange for a TNA title shot. Why they wouldn't just get a TNA title shot is beyond me, but those are the rules. And so it's we go all year long with, like, the regular X division wrestlers doing their thing, Trevor Lee, Mandrews, Eddie Edwards now, DJZ, but then magically as we get closer to Destination X, somebody steps in. Some heavyweight steps in and takes the title. And so that's what Mike Bennett wants to do. And so he wants to cash in the X division title and then go on to be the champion. And he said the idiots would get on their keyboards and write that he's not an X division wrestler. Well, I mean, you see him stand next to Eddie Edwards. He's an X division wrestler. He might be a little bit taller, but they're very built pretty similar as far as size-wise. I'd be surprised if Bennett weighed much more than Eddie Edwards. Hell, it wouldn't shock me if he told me that Eddie Edwards weighed more than he did. But Corgan said he believes everyone has to earn their spots. And he told him he has to earn Destination X. You've got to win. Well, yeah. It wasn't like he was asking you to take the X division title off of the champion and just give it to him. I thought he was going to try to tell him you need to, like, beat somebody in the X division first instead of just giving him a title shot immediately. And he said, last I remember, you were losing in here. He said they could make, Corgan said they could make headlines, not internet headlines, but trending. Like, what the hell are you talking about? He said that he booked Bennett in an immediate match against Eddie Edwards. And Edwards apparently was doing what Eli Drake was doing, just standing at Gorilla, because he was ready. I mean, he just came out just like that. They had his music all ready to go. He's dressed for a fight, all that good stuff. They go to a commercial break, and we know that the match would be coming up afterward. Billy Corgan, it's pretty funny. He's gotten to the point now. You could tell, like, he's talked about a little bit on .NET Weekly today. He's a little, for a guy who is used to playing in front of arenas and everything else, there is a bit of shyness to him, I think, when it comes to especially being in a role like this, where you could tell, like, he isn't completely comfortable, especially when he started. And now I think as he's doing it a little more often, he's starting to gain a little more comfort and trying to be better at it. And his idea of for trying to be better at it is to get a little too uncomfortably close to the person he's talking to and point and do weird things with his arms. He's just not good at this. I don't dislike Billy Corgan. I think he a student of the game. I mean, he's a longtime wrestling fan. Respect the guy. But for what he's done in the music industry, for sure. I don't need to see him on the television show. I don't think it's doing TNA any good. I don't think he's such a massive star that everyone's covering this because Billy Corgan is making weekly appearances on Impact. I think had they spread this out and saved him for special occasions, they might have gotten a little publicity out of this. And for all I know, they've convinced themselves that they're going to get extra publicity out of it if he turns heel. Does that publicity go anywhere? We heard all this when Billy Corgan first joined TNA's creative, and he got a lot of attention for it. I don't know that it really went anywhere. It got the brand out there, but they put him out there with Mahabali Shera and Grado and things like that. They're not making good use of him. At least now, I guess he's like in a higher place on it as far as the people he's working with. But it's still like he just feels so out of place character. Like, why is he here? Why is he with Dixie? And I get it's like, well, he's an authority figure. Why? Can't he just stay backstage? My big thing is basically this, that as a student of the game, Billy Corgan knows about how money marks are used. And you put them on TV to pacify them, which many people have said is what's happened in TNA with Dixie Carter already. He knows these things. So why is he convincing himself that he belongs on TV? Why is he telling himself it's okay in his case when he's not good at this? If he wants to have fun in wrestling, then go do it on the indie scene, but just get off of television. This is too much. I don't think like Maria and Mike Bennett are getting great rub because Billy Corgan's out there. I just don't. Billy Corgan means a lot in the music industry. He absolutely does. Does he mean anything when he appears on a pro wrestling show? Very little. And I just wish he would stop. And I don't know if he is being, now that he's invested money reportedly into this company, if it's, oh, Billy, you're doing great. No, he's not. He's doing terrible. He is way worse than Dixie Carter when it comes to his acting chops, and he could get better. I don't even want to see him try. I don't know what purpose it serves. This needs to stop. And if creative keeps trying to, oh, it'll be great, like what's happened with Dixie. Oh, we really need you in this. Oh gosh, me really? If that's happening, be a man, Billy. Stand up and just say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not doing it. You come to me with something that's really meaningful and show me how it's going to help the company. But I'm not going to be a weekly on-air character. That's ridiculous. I am not good at this. Know your strengths. And have this, you just don't be a mark. Step aside as far as the television goes. So we go from there. The third match we get, Mike Bennett defeating Eddie Edwards in 7:15 to win the X Division title. The finish was that Edwards was trying to roll up Bennett, but Bennett put his knees down on him and then reached out and held the ropes. And as he was holding the ropes, Maria reached in from ringside and held his hands on the ropes, so the referee can't see any of this. And he cheats to win and become the new X Division champion. This is the one spoiler that I'd heard about these tapings. I really didn't hear much about these tapings, and it was like, oh God, really? Mike Bennett's going down the X Division? It makes a lot more sense when you put the Destination X thing in there, even though the Destination X thing is silly. But yeah, he's the new champion, and I guess the idea is that he's not going to be a mainstay in the X Division. He's just using the title to try to cash in and get the title shot that he wants. They hyped the main event cage match, and then they went to a commercial. When we came back, Robbie E found that tablet that Jesse Godders had somehow rigged to get a bunch of different camera feeds in the Impact Zone, which is just bizarre. And can someone explain why there was a camera in Raquel's locker room last week? I forgot to mention that. So he's got all these different feeds that he's tapped into, but no one's explained, well, what pervert put up the frickin' camera? Is the idea he did? I don't know. But the whole thing is just kind of weird. But Robbie ends up overhearing a conversation that Jesse and Raquel were having, saying that Robbie couldn't know about something, and Jesse was kind of apprehensive about this. They never explained what. I'm guessing it'll be something stupid like, happy birthday, it's a surprise party or something. Who knows? Braxton Sutter came to the ring to face a masked wrestler. I think his name was Balaam. Rockstar Spud interrupts, and Spud said that this is not the Braxton Sutter show, despite how it may have seemed the last couple of weeks. So basically, he doesn't like sitting backstage while this guy's getting an opportunity to go out there and wrestle every week. And so he ended up dismissing this Balaam character, so we never actually get to see Balaam wrestle. And then Spud wanted the match for himself. And this led to the fourth match, which was Braxton Sutter defeating Rockstar Spud in 2:35. Sutter ended up performing a flatliner and pinning Spud clean. And then Spud was yelling that Sutter belongs in TNA, because he was, you know, he didn't have a mic in hand, so he was trying to make sure the cameras picked it up. And then he shook his hand and then ended up kicking him right square in the balls. So, and then he took off his belt, his studded belt, and whipped Sutter with it. So we've got a feud, and I like this. It gives Spud something to do other than be second, third fiddle for Matt Hardy's character. He just, you know, they turned him because I think it made sense with EC3, and they didn't put any thought into it beyond that as far as what they were going to do with Spud. And I think he can make this work. You know, Sutter's not the most dynamic. We haven't seen great mic skills out of him. They had him asked him to do a lot. Spud can carry that, and Spud can make this guy look really good, and I think they can have a fun program together. It's not as high profile as you'd like from Spud, but it's something. It's good. And who knows, maybe they were kind of apprehensive about doing anything with Spud because his deal was coming up. They just announced that he and Trevor Lee have both re-signed with the company, and so that's good. Maybe now we'll see them actually do a little bit more with Spud than they have. We ended up with a Sienna video package, and John Morris hit list today. I think he liked this more than I did. I like the basic idea of it. The only real complaint I have, because I'm all for kind of showing who these people are. They have a lot of newcomers, and it's kind of a get-to-know-them type of video thing. What I didn't like was that the only thing I really, that John and I disagree on, because we're, I think, in basically on the same page when it comes to the pros of this, I just felt she came off way too babyface in this. There wasn't anything that made me dislike this monster heel type, whatever she's supposed to be. You know, she's been the one aligned with Maria. And Allie, who wasn't on the show last night, I don't think, unless it was some backstage thing. She didn't appear with Maria and Mike Bennett, if nothing else. But she's been aligned with them. And, you know, the only thing she did was she said that her next goal was to destroy Gail Kim. And that's it. There wasn't anything really heelish, and so I think the pros outweigh the cons on this. We needed to learn more about Sienna. We got something here, but I hope they'll stay a little truer to the character when they do more of these in the future. And for the love of God, please do one on Jade and Marty Bell, so we know who the hell we're supposed to cheer for. Josh Matthews did hype that Sienna would defend the TNA Knockouts Championship against Gail Kim on next week's show. So that joins Lashley against EC3 and Galloway in a triple threat for the TNA title. So two big title matches next week. It's an amazing concept, telling people a week out what they can look forward to. I don't know why WWE stopped doing this more often than not. I mean, it's rare that WWE does that. But TNA does it, and they do it frequently. Jeff Hardy made his entrance for the main event, and there were... and he was throwing tables inside the ring, and then Rebbie Hardy came out with her baby, and she said, "Don't call Matt crazy just because you can't understand his brilliance." And he comes out carrying a chair, and Matthews was talking about how he's certifiably crazy. They go to start the match, and there's already tables, ladders, and chairs inside the cage. And so they ended up going to commercial early on with Matt in control. Matt was just taking a ton of punishment, and this was the idea. And Josh Matthews and the Pope are doing a good job of emphasizing that. I'm not quite sure for what purpose yet, if they're just going to try to keep this alive. I mean, it is ridiculous that we keep having Matt and Jeff matches, and the babyface just keeps winning. That you would think that if they're going to have this series of matches, Jeff would lose one, and Matt would actually come out on top once in a, you know, here and there. But no, it's been all Jeff, and that was the same thing here. He beat Matt Hardy in the Six Sides of Steel cage match. The finish, he did this thing where he put his brother on a table, and then he stacked some chairs over him. Basically, the chairs were there to protect Matt because he put another table on top of him. And then he went to... Now, the cage would have been more than enough because he ended up bringing a ladder in, a really tall ladder, that was just a little bit higher than the cage was. Now, for all I know, it's like, well, the ladder was easier to leap off, you know, leap from, and it's just he had better footing there. I don't know. But, I mean, it wasn't, I don't know that he needed to go, you know, 3 inches higher or whatever it was than the actual cage. Now, the overall spot, pretty insane, and it was scary because Jeff ends up landing basically on his face, but it's Jeff, and wrestling doesn't hurt him, only motorbike jumping does. And so he ended up popping right up. But it was, yeah, he took this, it was kind of on his face and shoulder. It looked like he overshot the first table. And that table broke, and so did the one that Matt was actually lying on. And so it worked fine. You know, it wasn't like he landed right on him and they broke through. And I just wonder, was that kind of by design? Just so you didn't run the risk of the table breaking into Matt. And that's why I say the chairs were there, I think, as protection, to make sure there wasn't like any edges of the table basically stabbing Matt. You had the chairs covering him up. But it was another wild spot from Jeff, and then he just jumped up and covered Matt, and he got the win. So Jeff wins again. But again, broadcast team just going on and on about what's driving Matt Hardy. He's taken all these twists of fate, and he's taken a swanton bomb, and he just keeps kicking out. So they're really putting over that he's crazy, and that he just has this resiliency to him, I guess, that he can just continue to take all this punishment from Jeff and hang in there. No indication that this was the end of the program between the Hardy brothers. I don't know where they go from here. I mean, they've pretty much, am I forgetting a big gimmick match they haven't had yet? Because they've already had a number of them with the Full Metal Mayhem and I Quit match, and now this this cage match. And the first one, Jeff may as well have, he basically won. It's just Matt was knocked out and couldn't say I quit. And then, yeah, he did win Full Metal Mayhem, and now he wins this. So I'm surprised they haven't done more with Matt. And I was also surprised we didn't hear from the Hardys during this show leading up to it. Lord knows we've heard a lot from them in the past weeks, but thought we might hear something from them leading into this match to kind of build it up throughout the show. Overall show, the Dixie and Billy Corgan thing just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. Main event was entertaining. The atmosphere in the Impact Zone was a major miss. Very disappointing just to have the crowd go flat after they had actually been pretty good in recent weeks. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't my favorite Impact show by any means. I wouldn't say it was a terrible show, but the atmosphere was just was bad. But there were some pluses to it. I like that, again, that they're advertising things a week in advance, and next week's show feels big with the TNA title on the line and then the TNA Knockouts Championship on the line. So they're doing a good job with that. But that is going to do it for now. But, hey, please remember to subscribe to this daily podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. It's always appreciated whenever you do something like that because you are helping spread the word about this podcast and ProWrestling.net. And again, hey, everybody, now that you're done here, head on over to The Ross Report. Check it out at jrsbarbecue.com or at Podcast One, and listen to my second appearance on the Ross Report podcast. Until next time, take care.